I just want to take a second and thank Policy Genius. They're supporting today's episode of Success Story. I know we all have kids, we all have families we want to take care of, and I personally checked something off major on my to-do list, life insurance. It's a tough topic, it's really hard to think about, but it's so important. And the hard part was sorting through all the options. Luckily, I found Policy Genius. Policy Genius is an online insurance marketplace that makes getting life insurance surprisingly easy. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Now, knowing my family's protected brings me incredible peace of mind. Don't put off this important decision. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Eufy is sponsoring today's video. They reached out to me. I tested out their video lock. It is a game changer. I'm going to paint a picture for you for why I'm so excited to work with them. So, you're getting home, your arms are loaded with groceries or packages or boxes or everything, and your keys are in your pocket. This drives me nuts. This happens all the time. I upgraded to the Eufy video lock, fingerprint, tap, I'm inside. And honestly, I also feel way safer. It's got this awesome built-in camera. So whether it's a package delivery or late night Uber order, I see exactly who's there right from my phone. There are no more mystery knocks. And the best part, this thing was such a breeze to set up. There's no wires, there's no drilling. There's also no monthly subscription fees. So if you are done fumbling with your keys, because I definitely am, search for Eufy Video Lock or head over to eufyofficial.com/video lock. Your front door, your sanity. Welcome to the Success Story Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Clary. On this podcast, I have candid interviews with execs, celebrities, politicians, and other notable figures, all who have achieved success through both wins and losses, to learn more about their life, their ideas, and their insights. I sit down with leaders and mentors and unpack their story to help pass those lessons on to others, through both experiences and tactical strategy for business professionals, entrepreneurs, and everyone in between. Without further ado, another episode of the Success Story Podcast.
Thanks again for joining me. I am sitting down with Keenan Beasley, who is the chairman and executive director of Venture Noir. Now, Keenan is an industry disruptor, marketing executive, and serial entrepreneur with more than a decade of consumer marketing experience after leading billion-dollar brands at Procter & Gamble, Reckitt, Benckiser, and L'Oreal. He launched the marketing agency BLK Box, Black Box, in 2014. His mission was to build a company focused on understanding how people were influenced and apply those insights to deliver growth for brands. Now, like I mentioned, he currently serves as executive director of Venture Noir. We're going to go into what that's all about. He is a Walton Family Foundation grant recipient. Venture Noir is a diversity, equity, and inclusion partner helping entrepreneurs of color with non-dilutive grants and mentorship to launch and scale successful businesses. Born and raised in LA, Keen's a proud graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point. Very excited to chat. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Scott.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. You have an incredible career. You're doing a lot of good work. But I want to, you know, to tee these up, I like to sort of go through the origin story. So walk me through your career and how you got here, and wherever you want to start is fine, because you've done a lot. So I don't want to drag it out. But I think there's a lot of really good experience that you have. And I want to sort of, like, we can go through that. And I'm sure that sort of impacted what you're doing now.
Yeah, you know, I think the easiest thing to start is the fact that, you know, I grew up as a football player. Right. So that speaks to a lot of my philosophy and the way that I shape things. Obviously, you can see the helmet and the football back there. But, you know, for me, it was this pattern around discipline, hard work, and teamwork. So, you know, that is what, you know, carried me through to West Point and, you know, where I was a D1 football player. You know, after West Point, I got into the business sector and really I found myself in marketing. And I think it's a weird transition for people to go from West Point to engineering school into marketing. But again, for me, it was around teamwork, right, and service. And that's what the military teaches you. That's what football teaches you. You know, I was an outside linebacker, defensive end. And sometimes you got to throw yourself in a pile for the guys behind you. So You know, when you look at marketing, marketing is about serving the greater good of people, right? Bringing products and solutions to them that they're looking for. So, you know, I worked at Procter & Gamble. That was on, you know, Tide. I led Gillette globally. Ended up at Reckitt Benckiser where I led Lysol globally, Lysol Dettol, and then was the youngest vice president over at L'Oreal on Garnier. And all of that taught me just were the insights around humanity, right? How people are operating and what you need to do to serve them better. And so, you know, for me, what I've done is really dedicate my life to service. That's what took me to Venture Noir on a way to serve entrepreneurs to do a lot of what I've been doing. You know, I'm now, this is my fifth company that I've started, which is Supply Factory Brand. So we have an amazing hair care line. I have a cannabis business. We've gone through all the stages, right? I've bootstrapped businesses. I've raised venture capital. I've done the friends and family rounds. I've taken out loans. I've done, you know, all of the tough things that we do as entrepreneurs. And, you know, I wanted to create Venture Noir to help more folks go through that process, right? Help navigate those seas, for lack of a better word. And that's been really rewarding. So really exciting to do that.
No, it's a really impressive career, and I appreciate you sort of lining up your experience. Now, when you launched Venture Noir, what were the types of entrepreneurs that you were working with? Was there a certain industry, a certain type of entrepreneur? Was it literally anybody who just needed some extra help, needed like a little bit of a leg up that you would take on? What was the sort of the core customer for Venture Noir?
You know, when I was coming up with the concept, it was the question I kept asking myself was, how come there's not a black Zuckerberg or Bezos, right? These moguls, right, in the epitome of entrepreneurship. I wasn't seeing that in the black community that I could point to, right, that really had the liquidity event. And when I say, you know, the top of the, you know, mountain for an entrepreneur is to go public or get acquired. And I wasn't seeing that. Right? And I said, okay, there's an issue. So I had to start looking at the pipeline. And one thing that I've always been taught by my dad is you need volume, right? So you need more. So Venture Noir is a venture catalyst organization. It is about creating and stimulating more businesses. Where I saw the gap was at the very early stage. So people that are considering becoming entrepreneurs, right, that are working corporately like I was and looking at making the leap, where we've done some programs, folks that have just cracked their business plan and are stuck trying to figure out how to get started and where to go. A lot of what Venture Noir is about is eliminating that blockage, right? To just get you through that first rung so that you build some momentum, build that MVP, get in front of investors. And now all of a sudden the experience becomes much more familiar. And that's why you see people do these things over and over and over again, because entrepreneurship is so familiar. Right. Like I said, I'm 36 and I'm on my fifth company. And it's just because that's just who I am now. So the fear of starting, I don't have. I'm just like, I'm starting.
I was going to mention, man, I didn't want to say anything, but I'm like, shit, you look young for these roles. Like, hell, like, you look like, good job, bud. Like congratulations.
No, there's a couple of grades in there now. I got a couple, but not too bad.
So, but as you built this out, like I was looking on the site and you said for Venture Noir, there's three resource pillars, curriculum, community, and access to capital.
Absolutely.
Is that, when I think about an entrepreneur, curriculum, the knowledge, access to capital is obviously important. I feel like community is something that isn't focused on enough. Is this the community in your mind? Is it like an incubation program? Is it somebody who has gone through the same life experiences? Is it somebody of the same color, understands cultural background or nuances? What's community that you would bring to the table? Because that's the one piece that I don't know well.
No, it's a great question. It comes from the philosophy really that, you know, density breeds success. So it's the idea of a strip mall, right? So, you know, here in America, we have strip malls where, you know, you have one company that's doing well. Well, those companies that are around it tend to get some of that, you know, fall off traffic, right? And they tend to have better sales revenue because of that, just from sheer proximity. So a lot of what I think was lacking in the, you know, underprivileged or underserved or minority communities was that density of creation. So there was no Silicon Valley with diverse black and brown entrepreneurs. So we have to build those ecosystems. And what ends up happening is you start to rise then collectively together. You share experiences, you share resources, tips, but you also can share talent, right? A lot of times the failure rate of an entrepreneur is incredibly high. But in order to recruit those people, they need to feel like, hey, well, if that company doesn't work out, is there another job nearby that I can get? That's the unknown thing about, you know, Silicon Valley. You join a tech company up in San Francisco, right, or in Menlo Park.
Yeah.
Hey, that company fails. You got 1,000 other startups that just raised capital that you can jump over to.
You can walk down the street and get another job.
Absolutely. So that's part of what that community is, right? It's a way of sharing resources, but it creates a bit of safety and familiarity.
And why – this is a big question, I guess. I don't want to make this question too big, but – when there's a Y Combinator, or in Toronto, where I am, there's Creative Destruction Labs, there's a whole bunch of other types of these types of programs. Y Combinator is probably the best known. At what point does an underserved or an underrepresented group fail at getting into a Y Combinator? Is it when they're very young and they didn't have the educational circumstances to facilitate that or enable them to get to the point where they felt confident or competent enough to apply? Is it at the very last point? Where there's, you know, maybe perhaps not the ability, I don't know, I want to say racism at that level where they're not being accepted. Are they getting accepted, but they just don't feel like they have a lot of peers represented in the same group? Like, what's the point that the traditional venture capital or incubator programs fail underrepresented individuals?
A lot of it is confidence. So what I found was, you know, a lot of these minority entrepreneurs just were insecure in the process because they didn't know anyone else who had gone through it. There was no one in proximity. So there wasn't the entrepreneur in the family. There wasn't, you know, the aunt or the uncle that they could call on to talk about the process. So it's this foreign land. And a lot of what was happening in that foreign world of entrepreneurship, there were these early stages of capital that were not afforded to some of these groups, right? And the thing that leads our venture space is not VC capital, right? Less than 1% of all companies receive venture capital dollars. The bulk of that is coming from friends and family and personal loans. Well, when you have a wealth gap in the United States that is, you know, 250 or so years, that has a real impact on being able to serve that community because there isn't an accredited investor in your family to give you a friends and family loan. So that $25,000, $50,000, $75,000 to get you started doesn't exist. Right. So you now have to figure out, well, now I have to take out a personal guarantee. Well, if I take out a personal guarantee and I fail, which 90%+ of us do, well, now that has a huge impact and a setback. So now I just took that 250-year gap, now just went to 253 years or 260 years. Right. So it's very detrimental. So, you know, you have to figure out ways to build that confidence, which is why, how can we lower the cost of barrier, right? The entry point of entrepreneurship. Y Combinator and those groups don't address that.
That's an interesting way of putting it. So you're lowering the cost, you're giving them the resources because you have the ability to offer these at scale, as opposed to going and fixing all the venture capital out there and trying to funnel it more towards young black or underrepresented entrepreneurs. And I think that's an interesting way of putting it or not putting it, but actually helping facilitate, because all I see all over Twitter is just, I hate referencing Twitter. I'm sorry. It's not an educational resource, but I see a lot of anecdotally, a lot of people speaking about, well, VCs have to invest more and VCs have to invest more in underrepresented. And I was actually going to ask you, how do we do that? And I don't know if you have a thought on how do we actually facilitate that? But you're taking the other route, which I think is actually a very smart way, because it's a quicker thing to action. You don't have to change, you know, the whole cultural of a certain VC group that doesn't invest in underrepresented. You can enable them with the tools and resources you already have at a much cheaper, almost like wholesale rate is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, look, venture capital is a formula, right? So there's a way to hack that, and so they're investing in very like-minded companies and a profile of people. You know, if you're a Stanford dropout and you want to start a company, you'll probably get $1 million, right? Just by saying you want to start a company. And you know, the minority communities, you don't have that familiarity. So I had to address that in a different way. And part of what I feel the responsibility within Venture Noir is to make the process of entrepreneurship in the underserved community and make it more familiar with that investment community. So invite those venture capitalists into workshops. Let them see the innovation, right? The creativity, the thought. Now let's give that then innovator the process and the formula and how to package and sell that idea. And that's just part of the work that we have to do. And it's tough, but you know, I can give you, look, you know, I don't want to go on too much of a tangent, but I think what you also find in a lot of minority-based communities is the easiest thing to start with very little capital is a service business. A service business does not require venture capital because it doesn't scale in the same way.
Well, so they probably won't get venture capital because they want that. They want that exit.
Exactly. So that's why when you look at a lot of minority founders, they don't have the right businesses for venture capital. You know, now if you transpose that with, you know, a guy like my friend Rodney Williams with Listener, it's a technology, right? It's a beacon tech. So people get that. It's told in a very clear narrative that is modeled after a lot of what Silicon Valley has done in the past. I'm not going to say it's ever easy to raise capital, but he has a much better chance than somebody that is starting an agency, like was my first business. My agency would never raise venture capital.
And whereabouts, like, where are you finding entrepreneurs? Is it, you know, what's your best audience that will have the best chance of success? Is it people in universities, or are there individuals that are later on in their career? Where are you sort of finding your group?
I think the great thing is the entrepreneurs find us because they're just so curious. So a lot of, you know, the work that we're doing and why we, you know, are constantly trying to raise sponsorship dollars is we need to do more events, more activities,
more awareness.
And ways that people can then, yep, they can find us and they reach out. So we've done some great things with colleges, have a great partnership with USC. We've worked with TCU with internships, University of Chicago, et cetera. I've even done some talks at West Point. And if you don't believe, they have an amazing entrepreneurship community there. So colleges, absolutely. But then I think there's people with that real expertise from some of these companies that would do well in a startup environment, right? That I think they could really start to shape a culture because they have that technical expertise. Mm-hmm. So I'm also looking at bringing some of those folks over. And then I think you have your influential leaders, right? Your cultural leaders, that I call it, right? People that start trends. They may not have the technical ability, but they have the means to get reach and attention, which is also needed for success. Well, now I'm pairing them with a technical expert, and now you have a really cool team to build from. So, yeah, we look everywhere.
No, I think that, like, this is, like, obviously, like, a small fix or a small step in the right direction. Like, there's so many things that have to happen, and there's so many, I guess, replications of your group or you yourself have to scale to the point where this can sort of act like a group the size of a Y Combinator to really start to invoke meaningful change at a national level and then eventually international level. But I think one thing I've seen, and I think everyone's seen in the news, is LeBron James and Maverick Carter doing the $100 million investment into building their own, I guess, coined the phrase media empire. How do you continue the momentum of, you know, yourself? You're building out Venture Noir, LeBron and Maverick, they're building out their own thing, and you'll probably see some of this stuff, and it seems very relevant right now and topical right now. But how do you maintain that momentum and passion and just will to get people to do things a little bit differently, take on new initiatives, like yourself, a leader in the Black community who's starting this thing? How do we continue that momentum?
You know, I've patterned my success just from a bit of fearlessness and volume, right? I'm not afraid to work and just work really hard. So again, for me, not everyone can raise $100 million, right? LeBron can raise $100 million because frankly, he has $100 million.
Didn't have to raise anything.
So that's a feat that's a little different for him than say your average entrepreneur. But what I think we can do very easily is create more small businesses, right? So, you know, I think we've touched 1,000 small businesses and Black-owned and Black and Brown-owned companies in the past year. I think we can replicate that, and I feel that we can help, you know, that scales, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if we did 5,000 next year with more volunteers and more donations. And if you create 5,000 new businesses across the country, let's just say a couple of those break mm-hmm. free, right? And they then raise an A round and maybe take on $5 million and $10 million. Well, then that group's going to raise. That's how it starts, right? That's how you then build a Y Combinator. It's volume. And so we have to start somewhere, and we're just, you know, we've taken the first step, and now we need some help taking another couple of steps, but hopefully some corporations come in and they want to start donating, and that'll build the momentum even more, but volume for sure.
And I think that, like, you know, I see some, and the only reason why I focus on momentum is because I see a lot of, like, see a lot of knee-jerk reactions to social change. And it worries me because the second somebody takes a knee-jerk reaction, I hope they don't think, I'm good. I've done my bit. I've liked my post. I've posted my black square. And that's it. And that's a really dangerous feeling for somebody to have, that they've made a change by doing nothing. And that's what I'm scared of. I saw something the other day about Netflix. They just hired a new CMO, and she's a black lady. She's like super, super experienced. Like, an incredible CMO.
Both of them is awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. The name. I blanked on the name, but I was just reading the article. I actually, the first thing I went to is I wanted to look at her background, and like her background, her resume is so impressive. And I was happy because like she obviously deserves the position, and I want more companies to make moves like this, but I don't want them to lose momentum. And I don't think, you know, this was a prime time for Netflix. They were hiring for the role. The last VP, who I also can't remember her name, stepped out of the position after a year, and they hired somebody who was qualified, and she was just really qualified. That's the way I look at it. It was a great hire. She's really qualified. She's going to kill it. But I don't want companies to pass over on executives like this in a year from now or 2 years from now. And I think that's the red flag that I'm seeing. Like, I know Venture Noir is going to be around, but Venture Noir is still small compared to the people that still move industry. And these titans, I just don't know how to keep them engaged and keep it top of mind, because you look at some of these executive teams and there really isn't a lot of diversity, right? And that's the same issue with the VC funds. How do you start to... So I think it's an education, and I don't really have an answer. Obviously, I don't think anybody does, but I was just curious your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think the fear is real, right? And I think a lot of us have that, but we're sitting in a situation where there's a massive gap right now. Right. And I use the wealth gap because it's just so indicative of the history of the country. So when you look at that, every year you just have to try to take a step to close it. Right. And right now is a moment, and it's about how many steps can you take while it is top of mind. Right. And I think that's where my focus has been on. You know, Venture Noir is not new. We didn't start this, you know, after you know, the death of George Floyd or Ahmaud or Breonna Taylor. We started this a year ago, right? This is...
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins. And I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform: accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. Hiring as a small business owner is a major pain. That's why LinkedIn is supporting today's episode. You need people with the right skills and experience, but finding them can take forever. It is incredibly frustrating to keep seeing candidates who just aren't a good fit, and that's why LinkedIn Jobs has been a game changer. Let me tell you a little story. We needed to hire a graphic designer, somebody with specific tech and software knowledge and the ability to truly understand our brand. And I started with all the usual job boards, and it's the same old story. Tons of irrelevant applications. No one's really matching my needs. I tried LinkedIn Jobs, and the quality of candidates was just on another level. People with impressive portfolios, relevant expertise. I finally felt like I was interviewing the right people. That's truly the power of LinkedIn's massive professional network. You're tapping into this huge pool of talent you simply wouldn't find on other sites. It's about finding those niche candidates you actually need. And with the right people in front of you, hiring becomes a breeze. Did you know that 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate on LinkedIn Jobs within 24 hours? That is how well their system works. Honestly, do yourself a favor and try LinkedIn Jobs next time you're hiring. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/excellence. That's linkedin.com/excellence. Terms and conditions apply, but it's definitely worth trying out. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family-owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive, and I bet you we've all been there. And maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay. And what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real. There are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professional to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay.
It's been a passion of mine. I've been teaching at USC for 6.5 years now for free, donating my time to help this. So, and there's people that have been doing it for decades. So, you know, now we're just starting to get the attention. And I think it's about building on that momentum, which is what you're talking about, to close the gap a bit more in this time period. And now what happens is you get 10 companies to get through and raise some amazing Series A, 5 companies to raise a Series B, 2. Well, those companies then become really successful. Now you have a pattern of success. It opens the door then for that, you know, college student or that college dropout, for that matter, that looks a bit like me, who has a great idea, is extremely passionate, you know, and now there's somebody that may want to take a chance and make that first investment, which all entrepreneurs end up taking, right? Somebody takes a chance. So I'm actually really excited about this time to see what's going on, to see the attention. And I think people are going to make some huge strides.
I appreciate you breaking it down and going into this, because I know it's, you know, every time I go into social issues, it's topical right now, but it's a tough discussion to have, because I think, like you mentioned, like we want to sort of leverage the momentum, and it's sad that there wasn't momentum already. Like, it's sad that there has to be that spark that ignites a fire for, my goodness, for an executive to be hired into a role that she should have been hired in, or for more programs to start up, or for VCs to start looking at investing in underserved minority groups. Like, it's very sad. And I just, you know, to speak about it, and I appreciate you going through your with Venture Noir and whatnot. And I hope that it's, you know, I hope it's not, you know, sensitive to you, because you were doing this before, and I don't want to make it seem like it is something that came to light now. And that's very important for me too, because this is a great program that was already sort of thriving beforehand.
Well, you know, that's the goal of an entrepreneur, right? We're supposed to see a world that doesn't exist.
I like that a lot.
That's our job fundamentally. So, you know, I don't spend a lot of time dwelling on problems or in the past. I'm a student of history, right? Because the learnings there are amazing. But I think what I'm focused on, what our company is focused on, what I see entrepreneurs every day focus on, is creating things that don't exist. And so, you know, if we're not seeing that equality, then okay, we then try to solve for that. Right? And so my attempt was, I thought it was a pipeline issue. I thought we need more volume of people going in there. Well, what happens with volume? You get more successful entrepreneurs. A lot of these C-suite executives were acquired. Their companies were acquired. And through those acquisitions, they then take those C-suite positions at these multi-billion dollar behemoths. So I see a lot more of that. You know, Tristan Walker, great example. Started Walker Co. with Bevel. Was acquired by Procter & Gamble. He now has a great board seat, right, with some companies. So, you know, these things start to move, but we can't ignore the early stage. And I think with that, we're going to start to see some change really quickly here.
I appreciate that. I have a couple more like questions that I like to ask yourself as somebody who's obviously like massively successful. You know, 5X or 5X entrepreneur at this point. Yeah, that's not bad, man. That's not bad. I have a couple more questions, but before Before I migrate off the topic of venture noir, because I think we went into it, like we really got a 360 of what you're doing. I just wanted to ask, is there any questions that I should have asked that I don't know enough about venture noir or the current predicament with underserved minorities getting access to opportunities and capital that I should have asked that you would sort of give some more information about?
Yeah, you know, I think I'll touch on just the technology piece just a bit because it's fairly new and a real passion area of mine. But, you know, on my for-profit side, I have what's called a venture studio. So we create and incubate brands to then one day obviously sell a few of them off, right? So we have four brands that are in the venture studio that are super exciting. What I love about that model, though, is it's a volume-based model, again. So what we've taken is through Venture Noir, we now have a collective. So how can we create more studios? So those studios then scale. So instead of helping one entrepreneur, we're helping five companies get started that are led by diverse entrepreneurs. And that piece is called Spectra, which is a very exciting portion of the business now that is all around this idea of an innovation collective. Mm-hmm. That we're able to do to rapidly create. Where I think this has gotten even more exciting is we invite the large companies to share openly some of their problems, things that they're looking to work on. So we invite Walmart to the table. We invite Procter & Gamble and J&J and L'Oreal to the table to share, well, what are some of the challenges that you want to see solved, right? You have an unlimited vendor network and resource pool, but you still have things you want fixed. Well, let's take those problems, let's throw them over to entrepreneurs and see what they come up with. And that ecosystem and communication has been really excited. It launched last month, and we're excited to take that one forward. But it's really about taking technology and doing it in a true ecosystem of shared resources around this idea of the venture studio.
And is this, I just want to understand the tech a little bit more because I didn't know this piece. So the tech itself, is it like a portal that people go into and they get resources? Yeah. That would be the curriculum or the knowledge base, right?
Absolutely. So it's both a portal and a community.
Okay.
And a portion of it, because all of Venture Noir still has a portal and a database, but Spectra specifically is for those venture studio owners to come in and be able to communicate and share experiences, because what they're doing is, you know, you look at my studio, there's eight amazing entrepreneurs that are in my studio that are working on things. Mm-hmm. Well, my job is to go and find stuff to stimulate idea and creation for them. I now can work with other studio founders, work with corporations to bring those ideas to them, because their job is they want to solve problems.
Yeah.
An entrepreneur needs something to solve. And so what we're doing there is bringing in more problems in a very tight community.
That's amazing. So that's how you scale a venture capital or an incubator model. You literally are creating these little micro communities of shared resources and talent across, like, how big are you now, right now?
Right now there's eight venture studios in there. That's US. There's actually only 15 black owned venture studios in the country. And we have eight in the collective.
It shows you, like, that's why when you talk about this stuff, like, I feel like, oh, am I ignorant? Have I just not heard of other like studios or like incubators? But if there's only 15 in the whole country, it's obviously there's not enough. There's not enough done yet, especially when you started this a couple of years ago, and you are half of them now. less my bad math.
No, you know, it's always humbling when you look at the space and again, the gap, right, that we're trying to close. There's roughly 150 black entrepreneurs that have raised over $1 million. So it's always weird to think of myself in a group that's only 150, you know.
Yeah.
I think I have 250 friends in my phone.
So
to think about the country, right? Those stats and numbers are alarming.
That's insane. That's what really drives it home. Like, we can talk all day about, like, underserved and not, you know, not having access to capital, but like the second you say numbers, that really drives shit home. Because think about, so 150 in what's the time frame?
That's ever.
Dude, that's not cool.
No.
That's really not
cool. I mean, you know, venture capital in itself is not like that old, right? But yeah, again, but when you start to put the numbers behind it, when you start to put the numbers behind Black-owned founders, you know, that are raising over $1 million, it's tough. Because if you think about, you know, the average beauty brand, for example, it's about $1.5 million over the first 2 years. So that means that entrepreneur who starts that business doesn't even get that amount. They're now trying to figure out how to get growth, take out loans, personal loans, right? They're doing a lot of other things to get to those, to get to that money. What it also does is it starts to handcuff you, right? Because you now are not well capitalized, right? A great business, we've seen tons, you know, you follow the IPO market, a lot of these companies have operated in the red their entire time, which means they're very well capitalized, where they can focus purely on growth. When you're an entrepreneur that has to worry about payroll,
and their own bills, you have to worry about a profit.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you have to be profitable out of the gate, not too many businesses can build tech and be profitable year one, right? That doesn't even exist. So you have to start to pump in capital into these entrepreneurs and these businesses. So we got a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, you got a lot of work to get it to a point where, my goodness, 150, that's just not normal. And that number is really, I'm sorry, I'm just really surprised. And that's just really not okay. Well, you're doing good work. I think that, you know, if anything, I hope the podcast gets you a little bit of coverage, because I've worked with, you know, I just have a soft spot for entrepreneurship. I've worked with entrepreneurs. I used to work, I don't know if you know Creative Destruction Labs, but I used to work with Creative Destruction Labs with a lot of their startups, helping them with like take to market strategy and whatnot. I was doing that for about 2 years and I really loved it. And it's just, it's very sad that a certain group is so underserved, because I think there was like, I'm sure there was like 20 to 30 different groups out of CDL every year that got access to that kind of capital.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one, and that's one small group compared to Y Combinator, which I think throws like 500,000 at how many different groups, like a fair amount.
Yeah.
So it's just very sad. I don't know. I didn't realize that stat was so, I knew there was issues. I didn't realize the issues were they're so prevalent. Like that bad. Anyways, I don't want to hijack. I apologize. That was really good. That was really good. I wanted to ask a couple just questions to yourself, just about, you know, some of your like life lessons and insights. So you've been incredibly successful over your career. What's one thing that people misunderstand about you?
I think it's probably the ease. I think they think what I'm doing is very easy. And mostly because publicly I share a lot of normalcy, right? Again, I'm always trying to bring humanity to my work. So, you know, if you follow me on Instagram, you see me cooking a lot. You see me working out, right? It's very normal. I think what's often not shared are just the hours, right, that you truly put in on these things. And not everything is big, right? I do a lot of really small stuff, and it starts to build. And that's how I've been able to do what I've done. Frankly, it is just falling off of past performance. You know, with Venture Noir, we took a $300,000 grant and we did over 30 events. You know, we talked to 1,000 entrepreneurs on $300,000.
That's impressive. That's super impressive.
I mean, the sheer volume of that is crazy. When you look at a pilot program, and that's just a lot of what we're doing. Every event now doesn't have 1,000 people, right? But, you know, when you can still touch and impact 10 people, 20 people, 15 people, 5, 1 sometimes matters. So, you know, a lot of what I do is I'm not afraid to work really hard for the small things and the small victories. And that's how you build momentum. That's how I build my career, is just continuing to put volume of effort out there. And I don't always show that.
That's a good answer. Very good answer. It's very telling. And I've heard that with very many, like a significant amount of entrepreneurs, just the ease in which they become like the overnight success. It looks at least to the person watching from the outside, but obviously not so much the case, right? It's just, it's a lot of stress and grinding and grit and just, it's tough, man. It's tough. And you've done it 5 times. So I can only imagine that you have more than one gray hair, but, but okay.
Strong one. Very strong. Yeah.
If you could turn back time and tell your younger self, you know, 20-year-old, you're not even that old, but say 18-year-old self something, what would it be?
You know, I'm really lucky. So that question is always tough for me. I have just some great parents, mentors, and my older sister. But the thing that's always stuck with me is stay humble, you know, work hard, and operate with a sense of fearlessness. And so I've always had this sense of confidence. And even when I am insecure, what I find myself, I will take an action just to see.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, part of what this is you can't be afraid to fail. And I probably would have said that just that simply to my younger self, is don't be afraid to fail. Actually look forward to it, because that means you can learn faster. And I think it would have helped me just push just a little bit harder. I think I still had a little bit more in me.
The next question, these are very quick. And then I'll just get some more information as where people can get more information about you. One person or one question I like to ask is if you could meet two people, dead or alive, who would they be and why?
I'd love to meet Barack Obama, former president. Just because holding that position, I think being the first black man to hold that position and the pressure that comes with that, mm-hmm. I would love to understand how he handled both the pressure but also the success. Because I think oftentimes there is a fear of success, of reaching heights that no one else has reached. You know, it's one thing, you know, there's a fear of being the first person in college in your family, or being the first millionaire or billionaire. Well, you're the first president, pretty big deal.
It's a pretty big deal. Yeah.
So, you know, I'd love to have that conversation. I think the other person that comes to mind for me is a guy like Jeff Bezos. And just, you know, how he's operated in that sense of aggression, but his desire to just keep going. You look at a guy that could have tapped out a long time ago. I mean, I think his net worth is up to $170 billion now or something. Yep. Crazy.
Just recently, it just hit that a couple days ago.
And it's not because of just the sheer money, but it's that he seems to have this lack of complacency. Like, he's able to fight that, like, unlike anyone I've ever seen. I mean, he just continues to push day in and day out, and he's attentive on his business. And I just want to understand what's really driving that. And I'd love to learn from that.
All right. That's a good answer, too. Very good. Two very good answers. What would be your best tip for making the world a slightly better place?
Ooh, that's a big question there.
It's a big one.
You know, I think for me, it comes down to, I'm a religious guy. It comes down to love for me. And I think when we start to see the humanity and see ourselves and other people, I think we'll start to see a much better world, right? Because it's hard to do harm to yourself. And it's definitely hard to do harm to someone that you love. And so I'd like to see a bit more of that, and not to get too mushy on this, but to me, that's a great solve. And, you know, I grew up with a lot of love in my house, and in my friend network. And I tell you, there's a lot of love at every stage that I've been in, from, you know, West Point to every company. And it's why I find myself in these communities, because in a community, you can feel that love. And there's just that willingness to help, willingness to serve. and love always makes you humble. So I guess that would be my answer.
Good answer. It's a very good answer. And then last question before we close this up, what's a resource, a podcast, a book, an Audible that you would suggest people go check out?
Ooh, that's another good question. So I have to give one, huh?
You have to pick, you can pick like one or two, but like you can't go off. I know that you probably have tons, but just one that's relevant to you now.
You know, a book that I often come back to, and I love autobiographies, Vernon Jordan, he has a book, it's called Vernon Can Read. And it was just the story of going through from, you know, sharecropper to, you know, becoming the, you know, senior advisor to Bill Clinton, right, when he was president. He's just one of the best orators in the world, but a self-taught guy, you know. And when I think about people teaching themselves to read, it's just like, it blows my mind. Like, if you put Mandarin in front of me, I'm not sure that with my whole lifetime I could figure that out. So I think that's just it, incredible. So I always find a lot of inspiration in his storyline.
That's a good one. I've never heard that one before. That's a good one, though. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, because I don't want to go into business books. I think there's so many of those, and I actually learn the most through application. So I'm a big fan of autobiographies.
Good.
So
very good.
I love to learn from people's life and their experiences, and then I can take from that and apply it to my life and my scenario.
Last question would be, where do people go to get more about Venture Noir, about yourself? And what you're doing.
Yeah, so you can follow us at Venture Noir on Instagram, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can email us or go on our website at venturenoir.org. You can follow me. Pretty much everything is just Keenan Beasley.
As
creative as I pride myself on being, it's probably the simplest thing ever because it's just my name. But I'm that on Twitter, on Instagram, LinkedIn, you name it, it's Keenan Beasley.
That's all for today. Thanks again for joining me on another episode of the Success Story Podcast. You can download or stream this podcast wherever podcasts are available, including iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and many others. You can also watch this podcast on YouTube. If you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast with your friends, family, coworkers, and peers. Please leave us a rating on iTunes. It takes about 30 seconds as it allows other people to find our podcast and lets our amazing guests reach even more people with their message. And remember, any rating is fine as long as it contains 5 stars. I'm Scott Clary from the Success Story Podcast, signing off.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/Scott Clary. That's netsuite.com/Scott Clary. Hiring as a small business owner is a major pain. That's why LinkedIn is supporting today's episode. You need people with the right skills and experience, but finding them can take forever. It is incredibly frustrating to keep seeing candidates who just aren't a good fit, and that's why LinkedIn Jobs has been a game changer. Let me tell you a little story. We needed to hire a graphic designer, somebody with specific tech and software knowledge and the ability to truly understand our brand. And I started with all the usual job boards, and it's the same old story. Tons of irrelevant applications. No one's really matching my needs. I tried LinkedIn Jobs, and the quality of candidates was just on another level. People with impressive portfolios, relevant expertise. I finally felt like I was interviewing the right people. That's truly the power of LinkedIn's massive professional network. You're tapping into this huge pool of talent you simply wouldn't find on other sites. It's about finding those niche candidates you actually need. And with the right people in front of you, hiring becomes a breeze. Did you know that 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate on LinkedIn Jobs within 24 hours. That is how well their system works. Honestly, do yourself a favor and try LinkedIn Jobs next time you're hiring. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/excellence. That's linkedin.com/excellence. Terms and conditions apply, but it's definitely worth trying out. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family-owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive, and I bet you we've all been there, and maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay. And what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real. There are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professional to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay.